Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Health Economics session. I'm Kati Noyes from the University of Rochester, and this study is a summary of the research project that was supported by the National Multiple Sclerosis Society that examined cost-effectiveness of disease-modifying therapies for multiple sclerosis. I would like to acknowledge the other funder, the University of Rochester CTSI Award, and thank all my collaborators who helped me with the study. For those of you who are not familiar with MS, it's an autoimmune neurodegenerative condition that strikes younger people, and that's what makes it different from most of the other chronic conditions that we typically examine that affect people 65 and older. What's even more important about this disease is that despite a very few treatment options that's available to treat to patients with multiple sclerosis, the economic burden of this disease is quite substantial. One of the categories are medications that are very expensive, and I'm going to describe it later. The main category of expenses are actually earning losses that are somewhat unusual for a chronic illness. But because most of the patients affected by this disease are still belong to the workforce, their lost income and lost future income is a significant healthcare burden. Also, because most of these people end up developing some sort of disability, informal care is also an important source of economic burden. Here is a diagram of the typical course of multiple sclerosis. There are several types of disease that could be distinguished, and preclinical phase is manifested by very minor disability, so people most of the time don't know they have a disease. Once they diagnosed is typically because they start developing relapses, a short acute period of function loss, such as vision loss or sensory loss or walking problems. In the early disease, that is the relapsing phase of the disease, the disability will go away and people will regain their functional status pretty much completely. However, as disease progresses, the frequency of relapses will increase and the recovery will never be complete until disease moves into progressive form without relapses but continuous increase in disability. Currently in the US, there are four disease-modifying therapies available to patients with multiple sclerosis, and I'm supposed to use generic names, so those are interferon beta, that presented by Avonex, Betaseron, and Rebif, and glutaramer acetate, which is Copaxone. Currently, the cost of this disease-modifying therapy approaches $40,000 a year. So the medications alone represent a tremendous economic burden to patients, and you can imagine patients don't pay it out of pocket. What makes it even more complicated is that information about this drug's effectiveness is limited to randomized clinical trials, which are typically 2 to 4 years in length. But the goal of these medications, or at least the claim of the manufacturers, is that they will prevent future disability, which is 10 or 20 years down the road. So in reality, we know very little about true effectiveness of these disease-modifying therapies. On this slide, I summarize the cost-effectiveness results of several studies conducted that, to evaluate cost-effectiveness of disease-modifying therapies in MS. And what's interesting is that studies conducted by pharmaceutical companies typically report much lower incremental cost-effectiveness ratio, which means much more favorable cost-effectiveness ratios, than studies that are not funded by companies or produced by academic institutions. That makes us all wonder about the true cost-effectiveness of these therapies, and but it doesn't make us wonder why this happens. In addition, there are other limitations of cost-effectiveness studies that have been published up to date. Most of the studies are modeling studies where cost information and effectiveness information are taken from different sources. And in situations like this, it's really very hard to account for possible correlations or substitute or complementary effects between different treatments and other alternatives. Because information about cost, as most of you know, is not readily available, researchers used either outdated sources of information or convenience sample, which results in the very unstable and sometimes biased estimates. In addition, there is a great variation in methodology and modeling assumptions between these studies, which multiply on the uncertainty about this drug effectiveness, generates a very uncertain picture about true cost effectiveness of this drug, specifically in the United States. So the objective of a study funded by National Multiple Sclerosis Society was first to evaluate cost effectiveness of disease-modifying therapies for US patients specifically, and longer term to build a modifiable decision analysis model that could be used to analyze cost effectiveness of new treatments that will undoubtedly enter the market in the next couple of years, and also help formulate or adjust health policies that are designed to affect patients with multiple sclerosis. We consider multiple sources of data and ended up using data from Sonia's Lithgow Longitudinal Multiple Sclerosis Study, which is really the only longitudinal study of patient multiple sclerosis in the US. The survey followed about 2,000 patients with all courses and duration of MS, and study used statistical weights to make a result of the analysis representative of the entire US population of multiple sclerosis. In addition, the study collected very rich information about all possible components of patient profiles and characteristics. They have information about quality of life, employment, use of medication, healthcare utilization, everything except the cost. For this study, we limited the sample to 900 people who had relapsing, remitting, and secondary progressive MS. This is a type of MS for which disease-modifying therapies are formally indicated. And we excluded participants who only had one study because we were really interested in long-term effects, and any patients with missing data were also excluded. So to build the disease progression model and to evaluate long-term cost effectiveness, we use disability-based health states as units of disease progression. Typically, in multiple sclerosis, disability is measured using EDSS scale, extended disability categories, that is generated by, as a result of neurologist evaluation. This study was a mail-in survey, so neurologists were not available to evaluate every patient. And representatives of the community that were enrolled in the study were supposed to assess their own multiple sclerosis status or report that they were told by a physician. Fortunately, there is a special scale, disability status scale, for patients with MS that allows to incorporate patient-reported information and map it to the EDSS category, which is a more reliable measure of disability. We used the first-order Markov model with annual cycles, and we estimated transition probabilities and rate of relapses using the multinomial logit regressions. The estimate, the published estimates of disease-modifying therapy effects were used to control for non-random assignment to the treatment in this longitudinal study. As I will also present tomorrow in another presentation about the methods for the study, we had to control for potential patient selection in the non-treated category. As you are probably all familiar with, in multiple sclerosis, there is a significant bias between patients who enroll in the therapy and those who don't enroll in the therapy. It is believed that patients who don't receive therapy typically have a slower progressive disease and fewer relapses, and so using them as a true control may not be very accurate. So instead of relying on patient cell selection in the treatment or no treatment, we analytically control for disease progression paths and created artificial untreated cohort by subtracting treatment effect from patients who were actually treated. To generate longitudinal incremental cost effectiveness profiles, we use a Monte Carlo simulation and calculated 10-year disease progression paths. So this is a summary of the study design. Because There are multiple sources of uncertainty in evaluation like this. We use a sample of patients to model disease progression in the entire population of MS. We rely on the bootstrapping and Monte Carlo technique to control for non-random assignment and for any potential sources of bias in our estimates. In order to estimate utilities, we develop negative binomials and Poisson models. And we used four different outcomes to evaluate effectiveness of this disease-modifying therapy. The main outcome was quality-adjusted life years. It's a typical outcome that we use in cost-effectiveness studies in order to be able to compare incremental cost-effectiveness ratios across different populations and conditions. In addition, we developed three other outcomes that were more disease relevant, such as years without relapse, number of avoided disease progressions, and gain in years spent with low disability states. And this results are supposed to have more meaning to clinicians and patients. Because cost information was not collected in this survey, we had to use Medicare reimbursement rates in order to quantify the utilization data. So here are the results for all the outcomes. And here I specifically demonstrate that if you look at the slide, this is the average utility over the 10-year period. And the blue profile represents patients who were untreated. And you can see that their utility declines faster over time than the health utility of any other patients treated with either interferon beta or glutaramyr acetate. Similarly, we generated 10-year expenses profiles for all the categories and for total expenses. And the relationship is the reverse. Patients who were not treated have much higher cost over time than patients who received any therapy. As I mentioned, we use Monte Carlo and Bootstrap to evaluate uncertainty around our estimates. And we also generated cost-effectiveness acceptability curves to examine how different pricing strategies will affect cost-effectiveness of these medications over time. So here are the base case results of the study. If you could look at the last row, you can see that incremental cost-effectiveness of any of these medications is well above any societal standards. We're talking about ICER and a range of between $1 million to $2 million to $2 million per quality, with the current standard being somewhere between $100,000 to $200,000 per quality. We examined several strategies that could potentially affect incremental cost effectiveness of these medications. One strategy was to start treating patients early in the phase as soon as they get diagnosed, starting with disability state 2 rather than at much later states, disease states, as it's done in the US now. So starting treatment earlier decreases incremental cost effectiveness, which indicates much better cost effectiveness of this treatment. What made the most dramatic effect on the cost effectiveness of disease modifying therapies is including states with maximum disability. In the Slivka cohort, there were very few patients in a bedridden state, and that's the maximum level of disability of patients with MS. So we had to model disease progression, utilization, and utilities of severely disabled patients using external sources. But including disease profiles up to final disability state and potentially death reduced incremental cost effectiveness ratio by more than half. So I can see the sign that I need to wrap up. So I'll mention one more sensitivity analysis is that in order to bring incremental cost effectiveness ratios for these medications from the $1 million into more manageable rate, it could be done by reducing the cost of these drugs by nearly two-thirds. So if the drugs will be priced in the order of $10,000 to $15,000 a year, then their cost effectiveness will approach societally acceptable range. So, despite obvious limitations, this study has some interesting conclusions. First, we supported the previous notion that starting treatment early can significantly improve cost effectiveness by improving patients' outcome and reducing future cost of severe disability. Reducing the prices is another strategy to improve cost effectiveness of these medications, and this is actually an approach that many other countries have decided to undertake. Also, despite the common belief that it relapses is a main concern to patients, it's actually long-term disability and disability-associated expenses that drive the cost of this condition. And the other conclusion that we observed by considering separately patients with early MS and by treating the cohort of multiple sclerosis patients as they begin getting diagnosed is also that there should be a strategy for starting and stopping this medication rather than offering it to anybody who is interested. In addition, I would like to emphasize that as for any treatment that is intended for long-term chronic illness, additional information about long-term consequences and patient preferences is critical to be able to understand the policy implications and economic consequences of this therapy. Currently, in the US, we're lacking any post-marketing systematic data collection, but other countries actually taking it a step further. And in UK, whether this drug's been approved earlier than in any other country, they now systematically collecting post-marketing data on both cost and effect as a part of the cost-sharing scheme. And they use this information to adjust the pricing strategies by negotiating with pharmaceutical companies. So I see that as a goal for US as well. Thank you very much.